Welcome, Siege fans. For this episode, we have some real-world experience with living in a grid-down world. How do you think your home would do if you had no power for 2 weeks? I'm here today with a Siege of New Hampshire listener who recently had to do just that. Due to a serious ice storm in mid-January, Jonathan's family and a significant area around him lost power. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks for having me, Mick.
Before we dive into what it was like for you to carry on without the grid, maybe first you could describe for us what that storm was like that took out your power.
Well, they predicted a chance of freezing rain for our area, but they didn't really say how bad it might be. It started out as just a cold, wet rain, which isn't too uncommon for our area this time of year. But by late afternoon, it did turn to ice. And just before dark, the power went out, which we kind of expected. Then the ice just kept adding up and trees started falling down and the power stayed out for a lot longer than anybody thought it was going to.
When did you find out it was more than just you?
Given the area and the history, I wasn't surprised we lost out. It wasn't probably until the next morning when listening to the radio and my wife's on Facebook and following different groups on Facebook that it was pretty widespread.
So you say Facebook, does that mean you didn't lose internet?
We have Starlink, and so when I was running the generator, or we have a small solar generator with a battery pack, and so sometimes I run that, but as long as we have power on, Starlink would work, and so we would have internet, plus, you know, cell service. Surprisingly, after the period of time it was out, I thought we might lose cell service, but the tower stayed up, so they either had a better power source or they did not lose power.
Yeah, a lot of the cell towers have a propane-powered backup generator to them that's supposed to kick in, but with varying amounts of how much propane they have on hand.
And the grid is rather chaotic. A neighbor behind us, a half mile, is on a completely different utility company, and they got their power back on, I think, 6 days before we did. And a neighbor across the street is on the same utility company, but on a different feeder line. So some people had power out for a few days and some people had power out for, like we were, 13 days and others were out for over 2 weeks. It just depended on how fortunate you were or unfortunate you were.
Yeah, that happens up here in New Hampshire too. If you're out on the very end of a line, it could be you're the last one that gets it. But if you happen to live on the same block as a hospital, you'll be back up pretty quick.
Yeah.
How many people in your area do you think were affected? Because it wasn't just you.
No, it was pretty widespread and rather surprising. There's a couple of cities nearby that the population, one is just over 5,000 and another one was just over 10,000. And they were without power for almost a week. The largest metropolitan area is over 30,000 and they had quite a bit of random power outages. I don't think the whole town was out, but in the rural areas, you know, I never really heard a total, but I imagine there was probably close to 40 or 50,000 people without power at one time, which for us is pretty impressive, and especially for the length of time.
So that's quite a few people around you. Did you get a sense of how the people around you were handling it? Not in the city, maybe, but in your area?
Yeah. Again, you're living out in the country, everybody kind of expects it to happen. And I think for the most part, people did pretty well. A lot of people in general have generators. Shortly after the power goes out anytime, you can walk outside and listen to the drone of generators all around. I think for the most part, people were all right. So at least for the first, you know, 4 or 5 days. And then it starts to kind of turn into a whole different world and different issues start to come up because in my observations, very few people had enough fuel to run their generator for more than a few days. And those that, you know, figure they would run their propane grills or whatnot for cooking, well, they didn't have the necessary propane to fuel those grills. So again, for the first few days, everybody did all right. But after that, it started to get a little stressful for some people.
Well, like what sort of thing? I mean, they ran out of propane, they ran out of gas for their generators. Well, then what did they do?
Well, then they run out of water. But at that time, the roads were passable. So people were making their way into town or hotels many miles away in different cities, or they would team up with friends or family in the bigger city that had power. They just kind of abandoned their own places. And some people were forced to abandon their houses because the trees were falling down and it was actually rather dangerous.
With people leaving their houses, was there an increase of break-ins and crime?
In some areas there was. It wasn't looting in general, but what kind of surprised me and rather disappointed me was the amount of people were stealing the copper power lines that were down. In some areas, the utility companies were actually starting to run out of wire because they had to find wire to replace the wire that was stolen. It wasn't just broken power poles they had to deal with. It was thieves stealing the wire, and not only stealing the wire, but they were stealing the tools out of utility equipment trucks and generators and stuff. Like the utility company would show up and set up a small generator to help run a substation or something, and then people would come along and steal the generators.
Well, I guess you can always count on crime. I hadn't thought that the power company would have to deal with the fact that their lines aren't just down, they're gone.
Yeah, I don't think they expected it either.
Maybe the only reason they stay up there now is because they're electrified.
Yeah, it's kind of reminded me of some of the scenes you see, like coming from South Africa, where people are stealing the copper cables. And over there, they'll steal them when they're still energized. But here, they were stealing them when they weren't.
So you mentioned the first couple of days of the outage, you were sort of in routine mode because it happens often enough.
Yeah, it does happen enough. It's not uncommon for us to be out without power for a day or two a year, you know, here and there, or just a random outage for a car accident takes out a pole, or in the summertime, you know, tree limbs will come down and they'll shut the power off because of the fire dangers or whatnot. So I personally don't get too excited until like a day or two later. Like I'll go a night without power before I'll drag out the generator, but I knew enough about the storm that was coming and the ice that was accumulating that common sense just told us that it was going to be a longer term experience. And so as soon as the power went out, I went out and drug the generator out, got it set up and ran it just to kind of the practice. So the first couple of days, it's not too big of an inconvenience, but once you pass a certain threshold, it turns into a kind of your life. For us, the generator isn't big enough to run everything. We lost power in 2019 with a snowstorm that dropped about 3 feet of snow on us. And we were without power for 6 days then. And we didn't have a generator that could run our well pump. And with all of our animals on the farm, that was a bit of a stressor to make sure all the animals had water. You know, it's one thing for us to not have water, but for all the stock. So we bought a bigger generator. This is the first time we ever really had to use it. And I'm very grateful we had a big enough generator to do that. You know, I'd run it in the mornings. I ran it for about 4 hours in the morning and the evening to keep everything cold and to pump water. And in a longer term situation, I would run that quite a bit less. And I would be a lot more frugal with how we did things. Even with all our preparedness, my mom has a little cottage on the property since she's older and she moved in to take, you know, help be near family. And she doesn't have a wood stove. So I had to put in a propane fireplace to keep her warm. Her comfort level was pretty high. So we were going through propane quite a bit faster than I had hoped. And I got to a point where I had to have a conversation with her to say, we have this much propane, the roads are closed. We don't know how long they're going to be closed. So once this is out, we're not going to have heat for you. So you'll have to either come live with us or we'll have to scale back on your propane usage. And she was fine with that. And we did that. And we eked out enough propane conservation that by the time we needed more, the roads were open and there was a little bit less demand. We missed the rush and the panic buying just based on the propane we had stockpiled. But then you have to consider things like that I never really thought about was laundry. Like after a good solid week without power, we haven't done laundry and my wife was getting a little anxious about that. I was making the suggestion that we can still run laundry in the machine when the generator's running and in cold water, and we could always hang laundry by the wood stove on a clothes drying rack. She wasn't quite ready to adapt to that level of frontier lifestyle at the moment. There's a lot more to it. It just seems like your life has to adapt to the need to run your own personal grid and all the balancing and the extra work that that entails. And then I didn't anticipate kind of the effort it would take to make sure my mom was comfortable in her cottage. We would make food and then I'd make sure to bring her food every day, you know, for meals because she didn't have a stove that worked because it was an electric stove. But we had our camp stove and a wood stove. It's not a cook stove, but I always kept a couple pots of water on it for hot water.
Yeah, it's usually not too hard with a power outage to muddle through the first day or two or three by just not doing some things that you'd normally do. You kind of described that already. But after that first couple of days of just not doing stuff, then you kind of have to do something. Well, like as an example, you can have 5 or 10 gallons of stored water and you'll be okay for a few days, unless you've got animals, of course. After that water starts running out, you got to do something else. So you really can't just hold your breath and wait. About when was that got to do something threshold for you?
It never really got to the point where we were forced to do things we wouldn't normally do, just because for a large part of the area, there wasn't anything going on because the roads were impassable because of the ice. And then there were so many trees down and power poles down that we were just staying home for the first week. We did get to the point where life does go on. So we got to the point where we were able to start cleaning up some of the damage and carry on with daily life. For me, the farm chores, I would usually start around 6. Of course, it's dark then. And the first few days, I didn't want to fire up the big generator. So I'd wait until after it got light out to start doing stuff. But that put me a couple hours behind on my daily routine. I ended up hooking up in a second generator that we had just to run one of the barns so I could do my daily chores on the regular schedule and then be able to get other things done during the day. That's one of the things that kind of jumps out at you is you don't have enough time to do everything when you're trying to maintain your own power and deal with the lack of daily conveniences that would save a person so much time. I mean, we just was not enough time in the day to do the normal stuff on top of, I didn't go to work for much of the first, well, for the first week, I didn't go to work. And then when I did try to go to work, I'd get a late start because of the generator running and dealing with chores and dealing with my mom and other things. And then I'd want to go home more early to make sure I could get the generator going and balance that out. So there wasn't a normal life during that period of time.
Yeah, you'd mentioned taking care of your animals. The power outage, how much did that impact your farm chores, your animals? I mean, they're not normally grid tied, but some of the ways that you take care of them is.
Yeah, it really goes back to having the generator, and having it was a godsend, and not having it for the previous 6 day outage, it was really important to have that. I mean, if we wouldn't have had that, it would have been a lot harder. Because again, water's key. And in this time of year in our environment, water isn't as terribly big of an issue because it's everywhere. So for the animals, other than not having lights to do chores early in the morning or late in the evening, it was pretty much the same. They did spend more time indoors inside the barn because of the ice. So we ended up having a lot more work to do as far as cleaning, and they ate a lot more. So we burnt through a whole lot more feed, which gets a little bit worrisome. It's like going through more wood in your wood pile because you're burning more wood because it's cold. The cows fared the worst because they didn't do well walking on the ice. I had a couple of cows that I assume fell down, and they were a little lame for a while because of, I assume, slipping on the ice. But other than that, I'm grateful we had the generator because that would have been a whole different story without that. We maintained a relative level of convenience for that end of things.
Yeah, the generator sounds like it was a key, but generators, since they run on fuel, are going to be kind of a finite resource. How did you handle that?
Well, I don't know exactly when it was. I think it was when we started seeing pictures of people waiting in line to get propane. And there was only one gas station in this in one city of the 5,000 that had fuel because they actually had a large generator. People were lined up for 3 hours to get propane and to get gasoline. I'm a, obviously a little bit of a prepper, and I'll admit I'm rather unorganized in my prep. And I was starting to get a little worried about our gasoline because we do have a big generator and we did run it a fair amount, but it did go through a lot of fuel. I mean, it's over a gallon an hour when it's under a load. So if I'm running it for 8 hours a day, that adds up in a hurry. But I did kind of stumble across a few more cans than I thought I had. So we were all right for fuel, whereas many people weren't. Maybe it's just the lifestyle we live where I am a bit of a prepper. So I was a little bit better prepared than I realized. And I'm grateful for that as well as we all were, because that would have been a whole different story to not have enough fuel on hand. And I know from experience, there are a lot of people that did have generators, but they would take their generator camping. So they would be going through, 5 gallons on a weekend. Well, when you're running it all the time to try to maintain your lifestyle, which many people were, I mean, they're running their generators 24 hours a day to have all their conveniences. They were out of fuel within a day or two at most. And so then those people weren't better off than anybody not having a generator. And there are also many stories of, in their towns, people having their generators stolen. So the local hardware store, I remember they had a thing on the news where they were talking about all their shortages, and they said they had they ran out of chain and padlocks because people were going to the store to buy chain and padlocks to lock up their generators that were being stolen. It's a different world when the power's out.
Yeah, I can see where if you're leaving your generator run at night while you're sleeping, it's kind of a prime target.
Yeah, definitely for the cities. I mean, we're rural enough where I wasn't too concerned about someone doing that to us. Plus, we didn't run ours all night long.
Yeah, that seems sort of flagrantly wasteful to making power while you're sleeping, because what's it going to run?
Well, exactly. And I think that's something, I guess, if you're not of the prepping mindset, you might not be willing to sacrifice whatever convenience you might have. I have a neighbor that has a nice diesel generator, and he left his running 24/7 the whole time the power was out. You know, we kept in touch because we are neighbors, and he had a heat pump, so he wanted to run his heat pump, keep his wife happy. And I get that, you know, you want to be convenient, but, and I admit, I wouldn't have run our generator nearly as much if I suspected it was going to be a much longer outage than it was. I did not need to run it as much as I did to maintain what we needed to maintain.
You mentioned running your well pump. Did you have a way to pump a reservoir, for lack of a better word, a supply of water, so you didn't have to run the generator to run the pump for on-demand water?
Well, I have a tank that's set that is kind of the emergency backup. And it's not, it's, I think, as many of us, we have all kinds of projects that aren't quite where they want to be, or it's an in-progress project. And it's a 5,000-gallon tank that I have about half full. And I set it up mainly for the summertime because our well isn't that great. And if we ever had a problem, I would use that as a reservoir. But yeah, if I knew this was going to go on for a month or more, I would have worked on filling that up with potable water so I could use that as a gravity feed reservoir. I would have only run the generator for as long as it took to cool down whatever freezers we had and keep those cold and get water, you know, pumped for while we need it. Like, we would start the generator, and at that, while it was running, we would fill up all the water for the animals and make sure all the households had water where they need them, maximize the use of the generator time.
This is sort of a two-part question. One is, given the amount of fuel you had on hand, and like you say, with only one gas station selling it, and they probably would have sold out, you kind of had whatever gas you had when the storm hit. How long would your fuel have held out if you stayed on your 8 hours a day cycle?
We would have been fine for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, I definitely would have had to curtail it down to probably half of what we were running at. I had a 55-gallon drum that I forgot about because I have, you know, it's a farm, so I had diesel, and I thought it was a diesel drum, but when I was kind of rummaging through my random piles of supplies, I was looking at the drums, and I didn't realize I had one. So 55 gallons sounds like a lot, but again, when you're going through 8-10 gallons a day, that's not a lot of fuel. When the gas stations finally did open up, and it, well, they had opened up for a while, but I didn't need to go in. So I waited until after the kind of the rush and things calmed down. There were still quite a few areas without power, and there were fair areas that had power. But I went into that same fueling station with my 55-gallon drum, and there was still a pretty good collection of people. But they had 3, 4, or 5-gallon gas cans they were filling up. And there was another guy there with a large drum filling up fuel. I think we kind of got, you know, there's a certain point people are like, yeah, you know, this 5-gallon gas can business isn't quite as efficient as just biting a bullet and filling up a large drum and not having to worry about it every couple of days.
Yeah, I was thinking you were describing a line with people with the little propane tanks and the 5-gallon gas can. That isn't going to carry them very far.
No, and that's just it, is I don't think people realize it. Because if you're only running your generator while camping or hunting for a few hours, that's one thing. But the scale of trying to run your own power grid, it's completely different. And I never really thought too seriously about running the numbers. So this experience for me was really beneficial, because I could see that we were pretty well prepared. And I have a few holes for a, you know, say a 2 week outage, but anything longer than that, you'd have to scale up exponentially to maintain your comfort, whatever your comfort needs to be, or your minimum necessities. I don't think you could stockpile enough gasoline or diesel to really get you through a very long period of time. I have a small solar generator, but it's worthless this time of year because in the Northwest, there's very little high power sunlight. It's nice to have. We used it in the evenings when I wasn't running a generator and wind was a joke because there wasn't any wind. I still think that diesel generators or gas generators are the most reliable source of power. It's just a matter of how you would power it. And that's where I spent a lot of time thinking about your book and Walter and how that gasifier might be the key to a long-term grid down. Started collecting stuff to make a gasifier with. I honestly now think that's probably the best way to go. Yeah, I figure you gotta live for the environment you're in. And for us in the Northwest, there's no shortage of wood to burn for food and, for cooking or fuel. And the research I've done, it just seems like a really good way to go.
Let's assume that the gasifier is one of your not quite completed projects, and I've got several of those. If you had the intuition that the ice storm or whatever it was going to take out power for a really undefined amount of time, so you didn't know, 2 months, 3 months, you didn't know, well, for your household and farm operation, what would you think would be the kind of minimum hours you'd need to run your generator just to get by?
Yeah, it's a kind of a good question and one I've been pondering. I would hope I could get away with a couple hours a day. And of course, a lot of that would depend on the time of year. This time of year, it was cold or is cold, so the freezers wouldn't have as much a demand as they would in the summer when it's 90 degrees out. But in the summer when it's 90 degrees out, we'd have to go through more water. A few things I would do right away would be to fill up my reservoir tank. So I would have that, so I wouldn't have to run the generator just to pump water. And I would consolidate my freezers. We have a three or four freezers on the farm because we, slaughter animals and so we get a lot of meat. And so instead of having two or three freezers partially full, I would consolidate them down so I could run less freezers and less refrigerators. I would hope 2 hours a day would get me what I need to do, but I wouldn't know until the time of year and see.
So I'll launch into my last question was you kind of touched on things that you learned from this experience and things that you'd want to change. What do you think you'd want to fix after your 2 week experiment?
Fix as far as improve upon.
Yeah, improving your preps now that you've been through it. I mean, every time you go through an outage, you kind of go, oh, I should do that better next time.
Well, I would definitely say you can't, just like, for prepping, you can't have enough food. I would say you can't have enough fuel. My number one priority is to get a gasifier built and functioning that I can rely on. I would like to think more about alternative cooking. I've always wanted to get either both a wood cook stove and a gas stove that we could use for backup cooking. My wife's priority is a gas dryer, so we could run the generator to turn the tumbler on the dryer, but have a it's increasing just what I already have as far as supplies. I mean, we had plenty of food. We even used some of our freeze-dried food a few meals just because neither one of us wanted to try to cook something and go through the effort of that. Figuring out a better way to do laundry and maintain some of the conveniences. But the gasifier, I think, is my biggest thing that I want to improve on.
Well, that would give you the capacity to run your generator, which gives you all of that convenience. Run your generator whenever you needed to. Yeah, that would definitely be a handy thing. It's kind of the same here in New Hampshire, where I've got all the trees I can eat, but sunlight in the wintertime, I'm lucky if I can get 3 or 4 hours.
Yeah, I don't like relying on it. I mean, it is kind of spooky that if I know if that generator were to fail, I have a smaller generator, but the water would become more of an issue. It is something that you're dependent upon, and I'm not sure what the answer is to get away from that dependence. One thing I did want to say is the storm hit a rather local area really hard. What I've learned just from talking to a couple of different organizations is, if it would have been a bit wider spread, this 2 week outage we had could have easily gone into the 3 4 week outage. It was just kind of a freak isolated in a small area, but the grid is much more fragile than I realized. One wrong power line goes down and it would have affected a much larger area. We're really fortunate that it didn't turn into a much bigger issue.
But it sounds like if you had your scale back the generator time plan, you could have lasted 3, maybe 4 weeks. but maybe not much more than that.
Yeah, and our current preps, like I said, it would have been a lot less convenient and comfortable, but we could have managed.
It's sort of tangential to that, but is there any advice you'd want to give people to be better ready for an extended outage?
Yeah, you're probably going to need more fuel than you realize or think you do. If you're on the road to preparing, just keep, you know, keep doing what you're doing and adding more to it. I mean, the idea, like I say, of having like 55-gallon barrel of fuel is a little spooky, and you got to be safe with it. But if you honestly want to be prepared for a longer outage, you're going to need it. You're not going to get by with just a few gallons if a gas generator is your source of power.
So you mentioned you found that one sort of serendipity. Like, how old was that gas?
That gas, I believe, was at least 5 years old, and I did treat it when I got it. It ran fine. I was a little worried at first just because, you know, you just don't know. But it ran everything good. It was good gas.
Oh, well, maybe your generator wasn't as fussy.
Well, that was another thing, is it was really cold, and it's a dual fuel generator, gas and propane. And it was cold enough where I could not start it on gas. And I didn't really think about that at the time. So I would start it on propane and then switch it over to running gas, because it was also so cold that the propane would freeze up after about 20 minutes of running. If it's really, really cold, that generator may not even started, and we would have been in a world of hurt then. But because it was a dual fuel, I was able to get it going and then switch it over to gas.
The things you don't think about, huh?
Well, there's a lot of those. I've thought about getting a three-point generator for a diesel tractor that we have, but there's a few reasons I don't want to do that. One of them is the tractor I was going to use, it did not like the cold weather. It would start, but it didn't want to go in forward gears. For some reason, the transmission was either iced up or the linkages were frozen. So I couldn't have used it if that was my one source of power. It wouldn't have worked very well.
Well, I better let you get back to your chores, because I know I interrupted them. But I do appreciate you taking the time out to share your experience.
Well, thanks for letting me share, and hopefully this is helpful to someone.
I imagine it will be. So I hope to talk to you again, Jonathan.
Yeah, well, thank you. We really enjoy your story.
Yeah, well, thanks. I appreciate that. I hope you found this conversation as interesting as I did. I had to smile when Jonathan talked about how much longer everyday tasks take when the grid is down. I was just saying that in my conclusion to Chapter 2. He also described the dilemma that generators are for prepping. On the one hand, they are super convenient. They replace the electric power that the grid had failed to deliver. That can be a godsend, as Jonathan put it. On the other hand, they require gasoline, diesel, or propane, all finite commodities. When your stored fossil fuels run out, you're as without power as everyone else. While wind and solar are renewables, they can be pretty fickle and just not there when you really, really need them. That's not to discourage anyone from adding wind or solar or batteries to their preps. They are useful. But we have to be realistic about their sporadic availability. So far, outages are temporary interruptions that usually last just a few hours or a few days. For that, a generator is a handy bridge to get you through until the power is restored. Jonathan's experience points out that an outage could last longer than your stored fuel. Rather than behaving as some of Jonathan's neighbors who ran their generator 24/7, but could only do that for a couple of days, a more frugal mindset would be running your generator as few hours a day as absolutely necessary to make sure your stored fuel lasts for as many days as possible. If you're in an outage that's over sooner than expected, you'll have fuel left over that you don't have to replace. That's not a bad thing. If the outage does last longer than your fuel, you'll have given yourself some extra time to plan for how you might cope when it runs out. Extra time to plan is a precious commodity. If you have a generator, have you figured out what your bare-bones usage runtime might be? 4 hours a day? Two? Then, how much fuel does your generator consume in an hour? With these numbers in mind, how long would your stored fuel last? That is how long of an outage you're currently prepared to get through. If that doesn't seem like enough to you, you can act now to change the numbers. You could, for instance, reduce your minimum usage, make your fuel last longer. Or you could add to your fuel storage. Or you could scale your generator consumption. In Jonathan's case, he ran his big and very thirsty generator only periodically to power his well pump, to fill his reservoir, and to chill his three freezers. But rather than run his big generator when he really didn't need all that extra power, he ran a smaller, more frugal generator for occasional lower demand uses like lighting. How long of an outage are you prepared for? Next week, I'll have another chapter of Book 6 for you. If you find this podcast helpful and or entertaining, consider buying me a cup of virtual coffee at Buy Me a Coffee. The links are in the show notes. Thanks, monthly members, for your ongoing support. Talk to you next week.